WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons today, we have our annual visit from our little Irish Dubliner leprechaun, St. Francis of Short. And Frank is with us today. Frank, thank you so much for joining us.
Always fun to be here, Sue. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you. Same to you, and happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there. On the way into the studio today, Frank, I heard someone talking about Irish food, and I know I've got a corned beef in my crock pot, so we'll be having that tonight.
Well, good. I'm on my way to Stuttgart tonight.
You're on your way to Stuttgart. You will get some red cabbage. Not green cabbage today. Frank, what's going on in HOAs across the country, and especially what's going on in Virginia? Because we need to focus on Virginia sometimes.
Well, the Virginia legislature has finished up, for all practical purposes, its session. And the old saying that no person's rights are safe when the legislature is in session is as true this year in terms of homeowners associations as it has been for a long time. And what they did was they took the debacle of the Cogar management fiasco, which we've talked about on this show, and they turned it to the advantage of the industry. And it will, in my opinion, turn out to be, in the long term, very much to the disadvantage of homeowners associations. And we'll talk about how they were able to do that, and some of our experiences, because you and I went down to Richmond and we testified in front of committees of both the House and the Senate to try to fix this.
Frank, you know, for those who may not know what the Cogar debacle is, you want to sort of tell us a little bit?
Just well, about one of the largest CAI-affiliated management companies in Northern Virginia was Cogar Management. In fact, Cogar Management had the contract for the association where Shu and I live. And late last year, an investigation of Cogar Management was begun, and according to press accounts, although nobody's been charged yet, according to press accounts, about $2.2 million of the money, not of homeowners associations, as it's usually portrayed in the press, but of homeowners, because they're the ones who pay the bills for these associations, disappeared. And the prime suspect at this point is Mr. Jeff Cogar, the son of Mr. Bob Cogar, who ran the company, and Jeff Cogar was the chief financial officer of Cogar Management. And the allegation is that Jeff Cogar was involved in setting up a restaurant in Washington, D.C., and his wife was involved in setting up a health club in Northern Virginia, and that $2.2 million of homeowners' money was siphoned into these businesses. Cogar Management Company is now in bankruptcy. They're trying to reorganize. They're operating today under something called Cogar Tri-State Management. And Jeff Cogar himself has been charged with attempted first-degree murder of a Virginia State Police officer for allegedly opening fire on an officer with a shotgun. Officers from several police departments were involved. They returned fire. They shot Jeff Cogar. He went to Inova Hospital in Virginia. And
where he remains to
as far as I know, he's still there.
He's still there.
And when he gets out of there, the investigation of the $2.2 million will continue. So, seizing every opportunity to capitalize on this, CAI, which for years has been telling the Virginia legislature, we don't need any government oversight of homeowners associations, everything is just fine. We certainly don't have any dishonest management companies out there, much less CAI-affiliated management companies. And by the way, Shu, last time I checked, which was only a couple of weeks ago, Cogra Management was still affiliated with CAI to this very day.
Yeah.
CAI hasn't kicked them out.
No. And why should they? I mean, they're paying money. And, you know, Frank, as I told Tom Skiba when he was here, when you do stuff like that, it looks like you're condoning this kind of behavior. They have never, ever, ever, ever done that. They'll continue to allow these people to stay on as members of CAI, and now they've just increased.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we'll find out as we go through the bill that we're going to be talking about exactly what the legislature has given CAI the ability to do.
That's right. Well, for years, you and I have watched what happened in other states on this same general subject of government oversight, and we've been calling for government oversight mm-hmm. of associations for a long time. And CAI has always resisted it, and at the point where CAI simply can't resist it anymore, that the swell becomes overwhelming, CAI's fallback position is to say, okay, there'll be government oversight, but we'll be in charge of it. That's what they've accomplished in Virginia under House Bill 516, introduced by Terry Suit, Delegate Terry Suit on the House side. There was also a Senate sponsor for a corresponding piece of legislation called Senate Bill 301, and that was Senator Mary Margaret Whipple. Both of them have been very CAI-friendly for a long time, and at least in the case of Delegate Suit, it's not too difficult to figure out why. A really good place to look for information about your delegates and about what's going on in Richmond is a relatively new website called Richmond Sunlight, richmondsunlight.com. On that website, you can not only track all the pending legislation, but there is, number one, a really good comments blog where people can come in and talk about the proposed legislation. And there's also a link to something called VPAP.com, Virginia Public Access Project, I think, .com. And the function of the latter is to allow you to look up on the spot who contributed to a particular Virginia legislator. And some folks obviously ran Terry Suit's name through the VPAP. And way back weeks ago, we had this posted about Ms. Suit's contributors. Ms. Suit's political contributors include $7,000 from the Virginia Association of Community Managers, PARENS, a CAI-affiliated trade association within a trade association. I mean, they're all CAIers in their own right, but they formed a spinoff group called the Virginia Association of Community Managers. $5,000 from the Great Eastern Property Management Company, $1,500 from the Princess Anne Property Management Company, and $1,250 from Pia Trigiani, a CAI-affiliated lawyer from Northern Virginia and a member of CAI's Legislative Action Committee. And those are just the ones that poster was able to spot quickly. So if you wonder why we've got some of these bills written the way they are, VPAP will help you identify who's who.
Well, Terry Suit sounds like a wholly owned subsidiary of CAI there.
Well, I think that the list of contributors available on VPAP speaks for itself. Anyway, what CAI was trying to do here was to gain control of, in the first instance, the credentialing of property managers in Virginia. And they were able to do that. Effective the 1st of July, in order to be a property manager in Virginia, you're going to have a license. And the license will be issued by this newly created board, the Common Interest Community Board. And that board will decide what the licensing criteria are going to be. And, you know, what a coincidence, Hugh, if you happen to have a CCAM or a PCAM or a DCAM or something from CAI, you're in. And if you don't have it, but you go get it, you'll be in then. Of course, to get a CCAM or a PCAM or a DCAM, you have to be what, Chu?
You have to be a member of CAI.
What kind of a member? A paying member.
Well, of course a paying member.
If you don't send in your dues to CAI, you lose your affiliation. What does this do?
What other kind of membership is there in CAI?
Well, you would think, as a nonprofit organization intended to, you know, be an educational entity out there for the greater good of homeowners association.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, no, you got to pay.
Right.
And you got to keep paying, or you lose your credentials. You see, and so CAI will increase by leaps and bounds its membership, and as a result of that, I'm sure CAI hopes to increase its political influence and gain even more power with the legislature. And this is truly unfortunate for homeowners because, as we've seen, the CAI positions in the past are anything but consistent with protecting or advancing the rights of homeowners and the folks who live in these associations. It's truly unfortunate. But it doesn't stop there, Shu. When you look at this House Bill 516, which is pending signature by the governor now, it's passed both houses, you look at who's on this board. You know, we talked about how CAI wanted to gain control of the oversight process. And so, first of all, who's on this board? Well, there's 11 people on the board. Three, according to the statute, shall be representatives of the Virginia Common Interest Community Managers. Now, what did we just say about Terry Suit's contributors, Sue? $7,000 to Terry Suit from the Virginia Association of Community Managers.
Right.
So three of the 11 positions on this board must.
When this bill first came out, it was 9 positions. And
that's right.
Third of them were managers.
Yeah. Yep, we're going to get to that. One shall be a Virginia attorney whose practice includes representation of, what do you think, Sue? People who live in homeowners associations?
No, dog poo.
No. Whose practice includes the representation of associations.
Right.
Not homeowners.
Of course not.
One shall be a representative of a Virginia certified public accountant whose practice includes providing attest services to associations. One, and this is just bizarre, one shall be a representative of the Virginia timeshare industry. You just got me on that one, Shu. Two, and this was newly added, shall be representatives of developers of Virginia common interest communities. And three, count them, three, shall be Virginia citizens, one of whom serves or has served on the governing board of an association. Doesn't mean he has to be on it now. Once in the past, he must have served on the governing board of an association. He doesn't even have to live in an association anymore, Shu. As long as once upon a time he was on the governing board of an association. And guess who that is? Any developer, once upon a time, was on the governing board of an association because a developer built it. And the last two, Shu, shall be people who reside in a common interest community. Two out of 11 actually have to live in one of these things. Out of 11.
But that was only added recently, Frank, and that was only added because you and I pointed that out as one of the big problems.
We pointed that out, Shu. Dare I use the word forcefully in front of the House and the Senate? And frankly, the Senate, when I went down to testify in front of the Senate General Laws and Technology Committee the first time, the Senate amended the bill by motion at that point to change the requirement from two people who reside or have resided in these associations to making it a requirement that they currently reside in the association. So that is the way the bill left the Senate. But we're looking at a House bill, House Bill 516, and when Sue and I made the same argument in front of the House Committee on General Laws, and she will talk in a minute about what that whole process was like going in front of the General Laws Technology with Terry Suit sitting there.
Yeah.
The House just kind of ignored it. House ignored it. And the sponsor, or not the sponsor, but the drafter of the bill, a fellow named Jack Rust, who's a lobbyist hired by the Virginia Association of Community Managers, he identified himself as a drafter of the bill.
He's one of three, actually.
Yeah. And he told the House Committee on General Laws, well, you know, when we went to the Department of Professional and Occupational Regulation, they wanted a lot of flexibility about these citizen members because they said, gee, you know, it's really hard to get, you know, citizen members. And Shu and I were sitting there. We'd already had our say. We weren't going to get another say. But we're looking at one another. Gee, you know, I guess the DPOR didn't want any flexibility in terms of who the lawyer had practiced for or who the accountant had represented or the three representatives of the community management industry. They didn't want any flexibility there. They only asked for flexibility with regard to whether somebody actually resided in an association.
Isn't it interesting, Frank, that in a county like Fairfax County where the estimate is that over 90% of all housing is in an association. Loudoun's even higher. You go down, the further out you go, the more mandates, the newer the places are, the more the housing is in an association, and they can't find three citizens?
Well, two of them. Can't find two citizens. Two people who live in associations. Can't find them. You need flexibility, Sue.
Because we can't find, exactly, in a state with as many HOAs as we have, we can't find them.
Yeah, can't, well, we just need that flexibility.
And of course the people in the House were dumb enough to buy that.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the Senate it went, as House Bill 516, and Shu and I went back to the Senate and we made the same objections and we pointed out to the Senate that, the House was on notice when they passed 516 in committee that the Senate amendment had already gone through requiring that these two members of the committee actually would have to be residents of associations, and that the House just kind of ignored the obvious will of the Senate committee. So the Senate committee amended House Bill 516 and sent it to the full Senate with the requirement that these two citizen members be actual residents of common interest communities. And that's the way it passed the Senate. That's the way the bill sits as it's on its way to the governor's desk.
And Frank, let me interject right here. Terry Suit was whining about that. She really didn't want, she wanted an amendment to that, saying that she would, if she no longer was a delegate, that she might want to sit on this committee, and she didn't really want to have to live in an association.
Oh, no, and she mentioned that she owned four condominiums as an absentee landlord, and who's going to protect the rights of absentee landlords? Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I think you have a lot more actual residents in these associations than you have absentee landlords, and I'm less inclined to protect the rights of absentee landlords as yet one more special interest group. And having said that, I'm an absentee landlord myself. I own property in two of these things, one in Fairfax County and one in Fluvanna County, and the one in Fluvanna County is a rental property right now. But I'm much more interested in protecting my rights as somebody who lives in one of these, and that was just flagrantly ignored by the drafters of this bill, and that was the limited victory that Shu and I were able to achieve by all the gas we spent driving back and forth to Richmond.
Well, and that, you know, it was over and over again, Frank. I mean, it was like pulling teeth, and that's the only thing we got, although there was so much wrong with this bill.
Oh, there's tons of stuff wrong with the bill. Let's talk about what the purpose of the bill is, and then we'll get to some of the other things that are wrong with it. The stated purpose of the bill, which is in 54.1-2353.J, is to protect the interests of associations adversely affected by the common interest community managers who have breached their fiduciary duty. The provisions of this chapter shall be liberally administered in order to protect those interests and thereby the public's interest in the quality of management services provided by Virginia Common Interest Community Managers. And that is the way that this bill has been spun to the public. We're going to protect the public, and we're going to protect the residents of these associations from unscrupulous property managers. Well, first of all, CAI, Coger is still on your list. Okay, you haven't protected us from Mr. Coger and his son, because Coger Management still carries CAI credentials. They're still CAI members.
And they're still doing business.
Yeah, and wouldn't have taken very much for CAI to publicly disassociate itself from Coger Management, but you haven't done that.
No one's complained, Frank.
Yeah, I see. So that's where you start with the purpose of the bill. But then let's see the general powers and the general duty of this Virginia Common Interest Community Board created by the bill. And these powers, in many respects, have nothing whatsoever to do with the stated purpose of the bill of protecting against unscrupulous professional managers.
Of course not. Why should it?
Well, the board may adopt, amend, and repeal rules and regulations and issue orders consistent and in furtherance with the objectives of this chapter. Okay. That doesn't sound too bad if the only purpose was to protect us against unscrupulous community managers. But then it goes on. If it appears that any person, not any community manager, any person, has engaged, is engaging, or is about to engage in any act or practice in violation of this chapter, and the chapter sues the entire POA, or any of the board's regulations or orders, the board, without prior administrative proceedings, may bring suit in the appropriate court to enjoin that act or practice, or for other appropriate relief. Well, why isn't this limited to bringing suit against unscrupulous managers if that's the purpose of the bill? Well, let's go on. The board may intervene in any action or suit involving a violation by a declarant or developer of a timeshare project in this chapter. Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, developers and declarants aren't necessarily managers.
So CAI is going to be given the authority to intervene in lawsuits. You sue your association for something, or they sue you for whatever. And, of course, we know what side CAI is going to come down.
Well, that's the point, Sue. Intervene in the suit on the side of whom?
That's right.
It doesn't say that they have to intervene on the side of the homeowner. They can intervene on the side of the developer. They can intervene on the side of the timeshare project. And guess who's on their oversight board?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, the legislature, they gave them all of this stuff, and they wouldn't listen, Frank.
The board, without compliance with the Administrative Process Act, shall have the authority to enforce the provisions of this section and may institute proceedings in equity to enjoin any person, partnership, corporation, or other entity violating this chapter or any of the board's regulations or orders. Such proceedings shall be brought in the name of the Commonwealth in the circuit court or general district court of the city or county in which the unlawful act occurred or in which the defendant resides. The board may assess a monetary penalty to be paid to the Common Interest Community Management Information Fund of not more than $1,000 per violation against who, Sue?
Any person.
Who violates any provision of this section. Well, I'm sorry, but there's nothing to keep this Common Interest Community Management Board from using these powers against homeowners, even though the stated purpose of the bill is to protect us from unscrupulous managers. Why doesn't the bill limit the powers of this Common Interest Community Management Board to the stated purposes of the bill? And given the composition of the Common Interest Community Management Board, how much confidence can we have that they won't use these powers to drag out litigation, to make it more expensive for homeowners who are trying to get relief against associations that are violating the Property Owners Association Act?
It's absolutely ridiculous. We're talking to Frank Short. This is our annual St. Patrick's Day show, and we're going to take a short break, so don't go away. We'll be right back to the other side of this song.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush me, Bucle, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon.
WEBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with us today is Frank Short. This is our annual St. Patrick's Day show, and we've been kind of busy this year up to now. One of the big things that's happened in Virginia is that we've got this bill that just passed and is waiting the governor's signature. Now, it's even though this is just Virginia, Frank, I think Virginia is the first one to have ratified this. I think that this is going through legislators across the country. So even if you don't live in Virginia, please be aware that this is coming to a state near you and be prepared to fight it. Right, Frank?
Oh, absolutely. CAI is already boasting about it in Tom Skiba's blog. And they're, if you go to RichmondSunlight.com, you'll be able to read the lyrics of the CAI Munchkin chorus singing about how the Bill of Rights is dead.
it's a great website. You know, we've been talking, Frank, a lot about the the dumb legislators who fall for this and who've written all these bad laws and all of this wonderful stuff. I don't want to leave our listeners with the idea that everybody down there has been sort of owned by CAI, because we have some good legislators as well, one in particular who, thank God, is our senator now, right?
Absolutely. Senator Chap Peterson. Senator Peterson was very receptive to concerns that we raised about this legislation. I sent him a letter pointing out some of my concerns, and he called me himself.
Yeah,
and and we had an extensive conversation about it. He asked for my permission to share my letter with other legislators, and I certainly was very happy to give that permission. And when we went to Richmond, well, the first time I went to Richmond myself, he voted against this legislation, and the second time we went to Richmond, well, I guess we should preface this with how things played out on the House side, because when Shu and I went down to the Virginia House of Delegates to testify about this bill, we had done our homework. We had copies of the bill with us. We'd marked them up,
yeah.
And as we got in front of the committee, they said, well, you know, forget that. We have, we've redone the bill. There's a new version of the bill. Here it is. Let's vote on it. And they called everybody who was in favor of the bill. And then they said, okay, let's have the yeas and nays. And they actually voted on it without asking anybody who was there in opposition of the bill to speak. And Shu and I were standing there looking at them, and they said, oh.
I raised my hand. I said, excuse me.
He
says, oh, did you want to speak?
Yeah.
But, Frank, they knew that we wanted to speak, because I went up and told the clerk that we wanted to speak.
Oh, yes.
She says, they're going to call you.
Yeah.
So they knew we were there, and they knew exactly why we were there.
Oh, yeah.
They did not want to hear from us.
Yes. Chairman Oder was the chairman of the House General Laws Committee, and he wanted no part of hearing us, but I guess once Shu kind of got in his face, he let us have our say, But it was very clear that this was a done deal and that we were wasting our time even talking to these folks.
He didn't even, they handed me a 98-page thing, and he didn't even want to hear from me. He was obnoxious, is a word that kind of comes to mind. He tried to intimidate me. They gave us a 98-page bill, and he says, tell me what language you want us to change.
Yeah, where's the line in and line out? Give me the page number and the section number and specifically what you want in the line in, line out. This was on a bill that had been handed to us, 15 seconds before.
They handed that to me while I was at the podium.
And so as she was answering his questions, I was doing the line in, line out. And when I stood up, I had the line in, line out for him. And it was, you're wasting your time standing up and talking about why there aren't any actual residents required to be on this thing, or why we don't have a limitation to the powers of this board that's tied to the stated purpose of the bill. So obviously we've got some CAI jamming going on here with their guitars in the background.
Oh, is it outside?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're outside.
But anyway, Senator Chad Peterson was kind of a hero on this, because when we got to the Senate and they tried exactly the same thing in front of him, he said, wait a minute, I came in here, I had read the bill that was on the agenda, you've just handed me, a whole new 90-page document, I haven't had a chance to read it, and you're asking me to vote on it. And they were somewhat taken aback that he refused to vote immediately on a bill that he hadn't read. And so he put it on hold for a week, and then came back and voted against it. And
what I appreciate with Chad Peterson is that he does vote his conscience. I've seen him be the lone, and having been in that position, you and I both know what it takes, but having been the lone dissenter. So kudos to Chad Peterson. I'd definitely vote for him again.
Oh, absolutely. He is a friend to homeowners. And if you live in our district in Northern Virginia, he's somebody who I hope will go a long way in the Senate and beyond. But let's get back to 516, and let's talk about what else is in this bill. As the bill left the House took the provisions of another bill that had been marked up and introduced as House Bill 1076. And the folks on the House side rolled House Bill 1076 into House Bill 516. The intent of House Bill 1076 was to address disclosure packets, the requirement of having disclosure packets, and this was introduced again purely for the benefit of management companies. The bill provides that if you live in a in an association that happens to have a professional property manager, you are now subject to a panoply of additional fees. And what's kind of irritating about this, Shu, is that, CAI has always talked about the great benefit of associations in preserving property values. Well, what this bill does is it immediately reduces the value of your home if you live in an association that has one of these CAI-affiliated management companies, because the costs of the disclosure packet apply only if you have one of these management companies. If you live in an association that doesn't have a management company, the most a disclosure packet can cost you is $100. And that is even limited because they have to be able to demonstrate that the $100 is the actual cost of preparing that disclosure packet. But as soon as you have a professional management company in that association, there's now a panoply of additional bills, starting with the bill for inspection of the property. Inspection of the property. Now, the inspection of the property can be done by a volunteer, can be done by a board member, but suddenly it costs $100. So that's $100 off the top of the value of your house just because you live in one of these associations. Then there's the cost of providing the disclosure packet itself, which could be another $150 or more. And just for good measure, we have something called the post-closing fee. And the post-closing fee, these are all addressed, by the way, in Section 55-509 of the bill. A post-closing fee to the purchaser of the property collected on settlement for the purpose of establishing the purchaser as the owner of the property in the records of the association, the fee not to exceed $50. Now, I'm sorry, but management companies are already paid through their contract with the association, and Shu and I have both been on the board. We used to work on these contracts with management companies, where the management company gets paid to maintain the books and records of the association. And that includes updating them when there's not only a turnover in ownership, but when there's a turnover in tenancy. You can have an absentee owner, turns the property over to a new tenant, and the management company puts the new tenant information into the books and records of the association.
It's not that hard to do.
Yeah, it's not that hard to do, and it's not worth $50. But they are trying to turn these disclosure packets into sources of profit for the management companies. And our friendly legislators have let them get away with it.
Well, you know, Frank, it says in the bill itself that the transfer fees are illegal. You will not have transfer fees.
Yeah.
So what do? They then come and call it a post-closing fee. And when we've raised this issue up in front of the legislature, the drafter, the sponsor of this stupid bill, the silly Terry Suit, sat there and she says, oh, well, we're protecting the homeowners, you see, because right now management companies are charging anywhere from $25 to $500 for this. Instead of saying this is illegal and you're not going to do it, she says, oh, we're protecting the homeowners. We're just going to limit it.
We're only letting you get ripped off a little bit.
Now,
and then, of course, we get to everybody's favorite provision. How is this to be collected if the owner doesn't pay?
Yeah, that was another glorious moment down there, wasn't it, Frank?
And, well, how does CAI want anything collected? You know, they want to be able to use the equity in your home as coercion to make you pay this. And God forbid we should suggest that they go to a small claims court where there's at least a modicum of due process and a neutral fact finder. No, they want to be able to collect this through non-judicial foreclosure. And as if we don't have enough foreclosure problems in Virginia and every place else these days, if you don't pay this $50 fee, the post-closing fee, or anything else in here, the way they collect it is they sell your house by auction on the courthouse steps, and they never go in front of a real court to do that.
Frank, if I remember, and I don't have everything tabbed really well like you do, but if I remember correctly, there's some place in this bill that says that they are not allowed to take the money up front. They're not allowed to request the money at the time that you make the that you request the documents, and that all of these payments are to be made at the settlement table.
Yeah, I believe it says. I don't have that particular provision tabbed. But that is in here. So yeah, that's the delightful piece of legislation that our guys have given us. And again, these fees over $100 apply only if you have a common interest community manager. If you don't have a common interest community manager, the ceiling is $100 or the actual cost, whichever is less. And why in the world was that allowed to become the law? Well, one of the reasons that's allowed to become the law, one of the reasons that it was drafted that way, is because who the drafters were. And so I started inquiring into who put this thing together. Where was it before it got introduced? And that brings us to the composition of something called the Common Interest Communities Working Group of the Virginia Housing Commission, chaired by Senator Mary Margaret Whipple. There are three members of that working group that are legislators: Senator Mary Margaret Whipple herself, Delegate Terry Suit, and we've already talked about Delegate Terry Suit's contributors, And then we've got Delegate John Cosgrove. Now, that was a new name on me, so I ran him in VPAP.com myself. And I looked up that General, that Delegate Cosgrove got $2,500 from the Virginia Resort Development Association, $2,250 from the Home Builders Association of Virginia, $1,000 from the Waldo Property ACT, a property management firm, and $500 from the Virginia Association of Community Managers, represented by Mr. Kirby. So we have that fellow, Delegate Cosgrove, with those contributions. We've got Delegate Suit with her contributors, and we've got Senator Mary Margaret Whipple as the chair of the committee. Who are the citizen members of the committee? Well, you have a guy named Jay DeBoer, who's the director of DPOR, the Department of Professional and Occupational Regulation. Then you have a fellow named Francis T. Eck, E-C-K, a registered lobbyist for the Virginia Resort Development Association. Now, where did I just say that? Well, the Virginia Resort Development Association contributed $2,500 to Delegate Cosgrove. He's tied in somehow also with the timeshare industry, although that's a little difficult to discern based on looking him up on Google.
But then again, Frank, that's why you've got a timeshare. You've got a representative from the timeshare.
There you go, on the Common Interest Community Board. Next citizen member is a guy named Dale Goodman. And if you Google Mr. Goodman, you'll find that he's got a management company, and he's also tied in with timeshares. Mm-hmm. Next citizen member is Ron Kirby, Virginia Association of Community Managers president. And $500 contributed to Mr. Cosgrove, and $7,000 contributed to Delegate Terry Suit, came from WSU, the Virginia Association of Community Managers.
That's right.
We have a lady named Cynthia Schreier, who's the Community Association Liaison, basically powerless to help homeowners, but that's her title, affiliated with the real estate board. Then we have a fellow named Mike Tolson, T-O-A-L-S-O-N, of the Home Builders Association of Virginia, the executive vice president. And where do we hear about the Home Builders Association of Virginia, Sue? Well, they contributed $2,250 to who? To Delegate John Cosgrove, one of the three legislators on this committee. Last but not least, we have Pia Trigiani as a citizen member. Pia has been on the show here with Shu and I, and Pia is the registered lobbyist for who, Shu?
CAI.
The Community Association Institute's Virginia Legislative Action Committee. So those are the people who put this wondrous piece of legislation together.
Surprise.
For all of us, and that explains why it reads the way it reads. And ladies and gentlemen, in Virginia, we got the best legislators money can buy.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Frank. So this, unless Governor Tim Kaine is sort of shot by a bolt of common sense and refuses to sign this into law, this is what the good folks of Virginia are going to be dealing with, right?
That's right. And all I can suggest is start taking a look now, whether you're in Virginia or someplace else, and find out the composition of whatever entity it is that first drafts these pieces of legislation. It's a lot easier, I think, to nip in the bud some bad ideas. And this thing, unfortunately, just picked up way too much momentum.
Well, Frank, you know, you have this group, the and I can't remember what it's called, the Housing Commission.
Yeah.
And a lot of these bills come out of the Housing Commission. So you've got the legislators who are in session, and they're told, hey, we've got all this stuff that's come out of the Housing Commission.
Therefore, it must be good.
Therefore, it must be good. You and I signed up to be notified all the information. I mean, I called down there year after year after year, and we're told, oh, we're not going to be looking at any HOA type of legislation this year. And year after year after year, there really wasn't anything major. You know, we were never notified.
No.
We were never, ever notified, even though I had let them know, given them my name and phone number number of times and my email address and everything else. When I raised this issue to Madame Soot, she says, oh, well, we've disbanded that. What, in anticipation of this wonderful board? Remember,
right? Right?
She came over. She was a little bit shaken when, you know, when we went. I've got to tell you, folks, Frank has got a really powerful voice, and he's extremely good. I was sitting there laughing because the last time we went down, you turned around and you pointed to a room full of people who were sitting there, probably all lobbyists, and you said to the senators who were sitting there, you see all these folks, there's more of them than there is of that group over there. And you're rubbing them. I think the guys standing behind you were looking, what's going on here? What is it they're rubbing us of?
Well, what I said was there's a lot more people who live in these associations than there are people who are members of the Virginia Association of Community Managers. If you look out here behind me, a lot of these people live in common interest communities. And when they find out what's in this bill, they're not going to be really happy about it.
You were laughing
and
at the
sitting
time.
No, I wasn't laughing at the time. And sitting in the back of the room was the lovely Pia Trigiani, who looked somewhat ashen-faced as she and I were departing the hearing chamber at the end of
that. Well, she was sort of slack-jawed and shaking her head like, I don't believe this.
Well, you know, wondrous as it sounds, you know, we accomplished very little in the process, but for my purposes, the accomplishment was finding out that we have a senator with, as they say in Mexico, some cojones who will stand up to the special interests, and more power to Senator Chad Peterson.
He wasn't the only one who voted against it. I love Chad Peterson. Don't get me wrong. There were a few others who realized and recognized that this was a problem, and they also voted against it. And for that, I want to thank them. I don't have a list of their names.
Well, it was Senator Bob Hurt, Senator Jill Vogel, who later voted for it, but who at least in the first go round voted our way on that, and so what Chad Peterson told us was he had been lobbied very, very heavily on this bill, and I'm sure that they were all lobbied very heavily.
Well, I got an email, as we were sitting there, I got an email on my BlackBerry from Senator Herring's assistant, legal aide, or legislative aide, I think they're called, and he thanked me for my email, said the senator agreed with me, and he was going to vote for it. So I sent him an email back, and I said, I hope that was just a typo, and that you wanted to vote against it, that he's going to vote against it. And as it happened, right after I sent that, Herring came in and sat down. So I went over and introduced him, and introduced myself to him, and asked him to vote against it. His response to me, Frank, was that there was an association in his district that had been robbed, had money embezzled, and that we needed this. We needed this bill. He says it was ugly, and we need something to help clean it up. This bill is not going to do it.
No, and one of the things that I suggested to them was that they take the provisions of the bill that limited the power of this board to dealing with unscrupulous managers and eliminate everything else. And they wanted no part of that because they wanted the other powers for the board having nothing to do with controlling unscrupulous managers. The other thing, we haven't talked about the ombudsman provisions in here, and we're not going to because of time, but I suggested that they take all the powers of this board that went to protecting the rights of homeowners, and they give them to the basically powerless ombudsman created by the bill, so that when he finds that an association is violating the Property Owners Associations Act, he'll be able to help the homeowner. And they wanted no part of that. So once again, we have homeowners out there in these associations who continue to live a life as second-class citizens. And what we need to do is bring these associations back into America and make us a nation once again.
Again, thanks for joining us. Check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next time.